Hi, this is Dan Melton. Thanks for joining us for this podcast of St. Andrew's Weekly Message. I hope you enjoy it. I encourage you to listen through the words to what God is saying to you, and may the peace of God be known through your life this week. Well, it's no fun to be lost. It's actually, probably as a small child, one of the scariest experiences you can have is to turn around in a store or at a fair or something and see that parents aren't there. Some years ago, I came across an incredible story about a young man who lost his way and then found his way home. A writer named Hunter Stensrud in Inspire Today reports, in 1986, a five-year-old named Saru Khan and his 14-year-old brother were searching the streets for spare change in their home in India. Saru's older brother, Gudu, wandered beyond the station, and Saru fell asleep waiting for his brother's return. A few hours later, Saru woke up 1,500 kilometers away in Calcutta, eons away from his home and family. He survived on the streets for weeks. He was taken into an orphanage and was adopted by an Australian family and actually grew up in Hobart, Tasmania. 26 years later, he found his way back to his hometown with the help of Google Earth. Anybody ever used Google Earth before? It's interesting. You start out with a globe, and then as you can sort of zoom in and sort of fly over places and then zoom in further and maybe even find your street. Well, Saru did this, and he said it was kind of like being Superman, flying around like this. Somehow he got to a computer and saw Google Earth and started using it. In 2011, we read in this account, using vague memories and Google Earth imagery, Saru identified his hometown. Using the ruler feature in Google Earth, he mapped out a search radius by making an educated guess about how far he had traveled by train, and after countless of hours scouring this area of imagery that he mapped out, he came across a proverbial needle in a haystack. He spotted one vague landmark that led him to the next, helping him unlock a five-year-old child's memories. He eventually spotted a neighborhood, street, and tin roof that looked familiar. Well, he found his hometown, and in 2012, he embarked on a trip from Australia back to India, and once he arrived, he shared his stories with locals who helped him find his way back to his mother and surviving brother and sister, and 26 years after accidentally leaving home and being lost, he found his way back. 26 years later. Wild. Have you ever lost your way, and have you ever wondered if you could find your way back? Have you ever felt distant from God and wondered, spiritually, how do I get home? Have you ever thought to yourself after you did or said something, oops, I really did it this time. I don't know how I'm going to make this right. On a spiritual level, is it possible that our modern lives, which are filled with devices, obligations, bills, could be factoring in a kind of distraction or causing a kind of distraction that in the end causes us to drift and to feel distant from God? Maybe there's not a dramatic break, maybe there's not a dramatic leaving, but could there be a slow drift by which we, as well-intending disciples of Christ, actually become prodigal? In Luke chapter 15, Jesus tells the story of the prodigal son, saying, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.'" This is already, his hearers are like, what in the world? That is the rudest kid I've ever heard in my life. The dad hasn't died yet, and he's saying, "Hey, just pops, give me my part, okay? I'm checking out." So the father did this. He divided his property between them, and a few days later, the younger son gathered all he had, traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to the fields to feed his pigs. He would have gladly filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. Now, this is like the depths of despair for Jesus' Jewish hearers, because this young man, is hanging out with these unclean animals. Okay, so this is like, whoa, this is like the depths of despair for Jesus' hearers. When he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare, but here I'm dying of hunger? I know, I'll get up and go to my father, and I'll say, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm not worthy to be called your son anymore, but would you treat me like one of your hired hands?' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion." He must have looked very different when he came back home. "But his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.'" He's giving him his elevator speech, his rehearsed speech. "But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly bring out a robe, the best one, put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate. The son of mine was dead, and now he's alive again. He was lost, and he's found.'" And they began to celebrate. There's a little party going on, right? Now the elder son, who is, you know, like not ever broken the rules, not gone off to a faraway place, not asked for his living father's inheritance while he's still alive, he's hearing something. He's like, wow, there's a party going on. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. Called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. This wasn't on the schedule. This wasn't on the farm schedule. Who's doing this? The slave replied, "Your brother has come. The father killed the fatted calf because he got him back safe and sound." Then the elder brother became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. He said to his father, "Listen, all these years I've been working like a slave for you. I've never disobeyed you, and yet you've never given me even a young goat so that I can celebrate with my friends. But when the son of yours came back who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him, the best meat we have. You slaughtered the calf so that you could throw a party for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you're always with me. All that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead. He's come to life. He was lost. He has been found." So Father Henry Nouwen was a Catholic priest who was a chaplain at Yale. He wrote a book about this parable. It's based on the painting that I brought this morning by Rembrandt. And just checking, is this in the shot? Can they see this at home? Okay, great. I'm going to hold it up and then put it back. This is the painting of the prodigal son, the return of the prodigal son by Rembrandt. The original is actually, my understanding, very, very big. It's I think, floor to ceiling. And it's currently at a museum, or was at the time of the writing of Nouwen's book about the prodigal son in St. Petersburg. But he wrote this book about his observations about the painting, and he was allowed to sit in front of it. He got special permission from the museum to sit in front of it for an entire day and make observations. And he looked at this painting, and he meditated on it, and he thought about his own life. Now, this is a priest who was a chaplain at one point at Yale or Harvard. I don't remember which. I think it was Yale. I don't think he led much of what we would call a prodigal life. And yet he looked into his own heart, and he saw that distracted drift away from God and how he became prodigal. In his spiritual life, he said one dynamic was preoccupation. He writes in his book, "Many of my daily preoccupations suggest that I belong more to the world than to God. More to the world than to God. A little bit of criticism makes me angry, and a little rejection makes me depressed." He wrote this before the age of social media, by the way, long before the age of social media. "A little praise raises my spirits, and a little success excites me. It takes very little to raise me up or thrust me down. Often I'm like a small boat on the ocean, completely at the mercy of its waves. All the time and energy I spend in keeping some kind of balance and preventing myself from being tipped over and drowning shows that my life is mostly a struggle for survival, not a holy struggle, but an anxious struggle, resulting from the mistaken idea that it is the world out there that defines me." You relate to that? If you're on social media, you really might. If you're on social media and somebody hits the like button or the heart button or whatever button is on your social media, it's like you get a little, you know, probably a little dopamine rush. It feels good, right? And then if you see nobody has ever, I put my heart and soul into this post and I thought it was so funny or clever or whatever, and nobody even noticed it. We can go up and down, or maybe it's at work. Maybe somebody gives you a compliment. That feels really good, doesn't it? And then one of your coworkers you found has been talking behind your back about you. That feels really bad. What Nouwen is pointing to is that when we are in that mode of reactivity, that reacting to the circumstances, to the fluctuations of opinion around us, that we are in fact prodigal. Because we, when we are at home with the Father, all we know is that we are in the Father's house and we are loved. We're secure in identity as being a child of the Father. It's when we go out into the world that we lose some of that security and we begin to base our self-worth on other things. Here's the tell. Here's the tell, if you will, as I read his paragraph a couple times. It's his emotional reactions that are the tell. If you're reacting out of emotion, something's got you out there. Something's got you. Something's got you riled up. Something has you hooked. And you're following that trajectory. What happens when you're criticized? What happens when you're praised? How do you feel? To what extent do our moods fluctuate on the circumstances and the moods of others? And could we become observers of our emotion out there in the world to notice what's got us, for good or for ill? How about our subtle mental life? What's going on up here? This self-talk, the inner monologue. What's going on with us when we drive up in our older car, but we see that beautiful new luxurious model that we had our eye on, and we don't have it, but somebody else does? What happened when we look at our outfit? These, by the way, came from Costco. I think they were like $10 or $15 or something like that. Well, when we look at our threads and we put them next to somebody else's threads, I'm like, wow, ooh, they're really put together. What's the self-talk? What about body image? What about I open that magazine or I see that person in the checkout line who just looks perfect? She's been airbrushed, by the way, to within an inch of Photoshop now, to within an inch of her existence. But she looks real good on that magazine cover in the checkout line. What happens when we see that and then we go home and we change clothes and we go, oh, I don't look like that? Would you believe these are all ways in which we become prodigal? We've drifted from the Father. We're in a conversation with other people about what matters. Here's something else he says. He calls it clinging. Clinging. I call the other, he said preoccupation, I call it preoccupation with reactivity. And he talks also about clinging. He says addiction, in quotes, might be the best word to explain the lostness that so deeply permeates society. Our addiction makes us cling to what the world proclaims as the keys to self-fulfillment, accumulation of wealth and power, attainment of status and admiration, lavish consumption of food and drink, sexual gratification without distinguishing between lust and love. These addictions, he's calling them addictions, create expectations that cannot but fail to satisfy our deepest needs. They fail every time. As long as we live within the world's delusions, our addictions condemn us to futile quests in the distant country, in quotes, using the words of the text, leaving us to face an endless series of disillusionments while our sense of self remains unfulfilled. In these days of increasing addictions, we have wandered far away from our Father's home. The addicted life can aptly be described as designated a life lived in a distant country. It is from there that our cry for deliverance rises up. It's in our attachments to these priorities that are really not the priorities in God's house, but the priorities of the world out there that, again, that have us hooked. When we chase them, we are in peril of going prodigal and forgetting who we are and what really matters and what's central. What are the moments where you've craved something, really wanted something? We all have those moments. What are your moments, and what do you learn about yourself by observing those cravings or that desire or that want? Let's do this. As you're thinking about that, and as we're wrapping up, take a moment to be still, and if you would like to, close your eyes. And think about the things that may have been bubbling up as I've been speaking this morning, the things about the preoccupation and the reactivity that rises up in you, the cravings, what Nouwen is calling the addictions, or the attachments is a word that I like, the attachments to the world out there, and what's got you. When we're in that mode, of preoccupation, attachment. We're in that distant country. We've wandered far away from God's safe and secure place. So in this prayer meditation, bring those dynamics or those things into your consciousness, into the center of your mind's eye, and let go of them. Drop them to the floor. Imagine yourself walking away. Keep walking down a path that gets greener, more lush, more beautiful as it goes, till you see this beautiful home, a place that feels like home to you. You walk in the gates. The Father is there waiting for you. Feel God's embrace, God's love, knowing that however you show up right now, you are loved and embraced. Thanks be to God. Amen.